Good morning. I am excited that you are here with us this morning, and I hope you will continue with us up until Easter as we're beginning this journey of following Jesus to the cross. And I truly believe that God has something unique and special for you as he calls you to follow him in a unique and special way. If you were to take out the Gospels and just read and follow Jesus around for a while, you would start to notice and see tone and kind of habits and the way he carried himself, the things he said, the things he did at different points in his ministry. As you read through the pages, maybe if you charted it out, you'd kind of see, okay, here he does this more, and here there's a definite change. And along the way, there would be certain points that would be really stand out as transitional points. Really just points where, okay, something is different here. And that's where we are going to begin our journey. And in Luke 9:51, you see the phrase, Jesus set his face. And that, in one small phrase, communicates that something has changed in the way Jesus is going to interact with the people around him, with his disciples, with the Pharisees, with anyone that he comes across. And set his face is really, it's a phrase that really we often would translate it as the word determined. And it's saying that Jesus has done a lot of things in his ministry, but now something has changed and he is now determined to accomplish the mission that he was set here to do. And that was to go to the cross, to go on the cross, carry the weight of the sin for us, to provide a way for us to have a relationship with God once again. And so he is mission-focused from this point on as we read through the Gospels. And in Luke, we see this phrase in Luke 9:51. And so that really is what is coloring and characterizing the next 7 weeks as we lead up to Easter, as we are going to do this sermon series called Determined Discipleship. And determined meaning, have we set our face on Jesus? Are we determined to follow him as he calls us, as he leads us in discipleship? Discipleship simply means to follow him, to sit at his feet, to study him, to live our life like him, to make sure that the way I respond, the way I think, my heart changes. This isn't a behavioral analysis. This isn't, am I making the right choices all the time? It's going to the heart and saying, is my heart following after Jesus? Am I allowing my heart to be shaped by Jesus? That's discipleship. Now, when we look at the life of Jesus from this point on, we're going to see that he has this mission to get to the cross, but there are going to be various people and situations that are going to try to stand in his way. The enemy doesn't want the mission to be accomplished, and so he's going to use even people closest to him like Peter. He's going to use his enemies in the Jewish leadership. He's going to just present opportunity to distract along the way. And I want to call that pushback, and that's why this first message is called pushback. It's that Jesus is going to experience pushback to the mission. And today, we're going to in particular look at Luke 9:51 and the following several verses, where we are going to see people that are attempting to follow him, but they themselves experienced pushback. And what I mean by pushback is this. It's a simple question, and it's really the main idea that we're going to look at today. And the question you need to ask yourself, that I need to ask myself, the question I've been asking myself for the last several weeks is, what keeps me from following after Jesus? Seems like a simple question, but it can really dig into some very touchy things in our hearts. Because the thing that probably keeps you from following Jesus is not the obvious. It's usually not, you know, otherwise we would probably address it. It's probably something under the surface, something heart level that is pulling me back in that particular area. And maybe you are fully aware that Jesus has called you to something or to someone or in some ministry or to give up something or... And as you look to that, something just like gravity kind of keeps you from going there. So that's the pushback that we're going to try to identify. And as we go further in the series, we're going to dive deeper into some of these and add to our list maybe. But this morning is really more about self-evaluation. What's the pushback in my life? Because we're going to see five different groups of people and individuals that attempt to follow Jesus or want to follow Jesus or are following Jesus, but there's just something holding them back. So we want to identify those things and look at Jesus' reaction to that and see, what does that have to do with my determined discipleship? You know, determination's an interesting thing. I feel like it's measured by the pushback. It's measured by how much am I willing to get through the thing that's holding me back from the goal. So we usually use it when it comes to maybe athletic achievement or health. Maybe you've wanted to lose some weight and you are determined. You finally decided this year is the year that I'm going to do it. Every year has been that for me. Clearly, I'm not as determined as I think I am. But maybe this year I'm going to be determined, because determination is measured by did you get to your goal and what was in the way? And as I considered, am I a determined person? I looked around at the world that I live in and I think, you know, it's very difficult to figure that out, because we live in such a convenient world. How many things really hold you back from what you want to do? You know, most days I pretty much can do what I want to do. If I want to go buy a burger, I probably can scrounge the money up to go buy a burger. You know, if I want to go eat pizza, if I want to watch this show, or if I want to do that or talk to this person, they're a button away. I can contact someone on the other side of the world. I can be involved in ministries. I can go see this person. Or, you know, when I think about what really holds me back, it's difficult to say am I determined, because I experience very little pushback in my life. In fact, I just kind of had two pictures in my mind to maybe help me understand determination, maybe help you understand determination a little bit more. And one is definitely not determination, but I think it is a common image and experience we have all had. Maybe not lately for you, but at some point in your life, you, after maybe an exhausting day, have decided to sit down and watch TV. And you turn the TV on, you lay down on the couch, and maybe your couch isn't always so instantly comfortable, and it takes a little bit, and you got to get all the pillows just right, and you're finally in the correct position for watching something, and you look up and notice what is on TV is something you don't want to watch, and you're like, oh, I'm gonna put something else on. Something else comes to mind. Oh, yeah, I have this. I'm going to watch that. And then it happens. You realize the remote's on the other side of the room. And as soon as that recognition starts to sink in at a heart level, what you are now watching on TV suddenly becomes so much better. And you think, let's just see where this goes. Now, that was a very small amount of pushback. Yet, it was able to conquer me and reshape my entire purpose. I was not determined. On the other hand, a few weeks ago, our students went up to Mission Arlington, and we met a young lady of 86 years old named Tilly Bergen. She started Mission Arlington in 1986. She's now 86 years old, and we had to run to keep up with her from project to project, as she has seen this ministry go from a simple apartment Bible study with kids to well over 300 apartments that they're working in, that they have churches active in, that they have now taken over several mile blocks, square miles in downtown Arlington, right next to UTA, where they have warehouse after warehouse after fleet of trucks after fleet of trucks. And she is still the one leading us around from project to project, to the point that we had to keep up with her. And in fact, at one point, our group was not all together, and they're just helping organize stuff, and a few of us had gone off to use the bathroom or something, and she comes by and says, okay, are you ready? And James was one of our leaders with us, and he said, well, there's a few gone. And she said, okay, I'll come back. You know, she didn't have time to wait for us. She had something else to do. She had what we described down there as contagious determination. There was a group of young men that were just loading trailers full of couches and furniture, and we were just postulating what would motivate them to come on a Saturday morning and do this. Are they getting paid? Is it a work release program? Like, what is going on that this group of 21-year-old guys or so, and they were not taking it easy. It's like they're getting paid by the couch. They were throwing them in there. And James had the idea that, you know, probably Tilly just has to walk by and just kind of be there for 30 seconds, and they're just instantly motivated. That's determination. There is nothing holding her back from the mission that she sees it, which is to reach Arlington and now the Metroplex, as it's called, for Jesus. And so as I consider my following after Jesus, I have to look at what are the things and identify the things that hold me back to be able to allow the Holy Spirit to invade my heart and begin to change those things. And so we're going to look at some broad things, because when I ask what holds you back, what keeps you from following Jesus, it's going to be a very personal thing to you, because he has called you to a very personal thing. But I think you can probably fit that thing into one of these five general topics. And so open up with me to Luke 9:51, if you haven't made it there already. We're going to read that first verse again, verse 51. When the days grew near for him to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem. Remember, so the days drew near. It was now time, that point in his time, that transitional statement there, he's now determined to go. And now in 52, we're going to see the first of our pushbacks. And as I said before, what I want to do is for each of these, identify what is the thing that's keeping this group of people or this person from following after Jesus. And then we're going to look at Jesus' reaction to the thing that keeps them from following, and then kind of take that next step and say, okay, what does that say about our own determination? So let's read it with me, because the first thing we're going to see, I think, in this Samaritan village, which is the first group we're going to look at, is that the first pushback is entitlement. We're going to see entitlement coming from this Samaritan group. So before we throw up 9:52, we're going to say, what is entitlement all about? Because that's the pushback that we can first identify. Jesus is getting ready to go, and in 52, he's going to get this group of messengers out and send them on ahead. Read with me in 52, and he sent messengers ahead of him who went out and entered a village of the Samaritans to make preparations for him. Now, this isn't the first time he had sent a group out. This isn't the last time that he's going to send a group out. Just before this, he sent just the 12 out, and it was a little different mission. He said, go out, preach the gospel, do miraculous things. Now, this is a different group. This is more, I guess you could say, administrative. He is determined to get to Jerusalem, and so he's going to send people ahead from town to town to say, okay, Jesus is coming. He's got this group of people. Are we ready? Are you ready to receive him? Do you want to, how hospitable is this town? You know, where are we going to stay? It's going to be a long journey. After this, we're going to see that he's going to identify 72 people specifically to go out. And it really highlights a little bit more of the transition of the way Jesus' ministry is going. Because until this point, there was a lot of, don't tell people. Got to keep it to yourself. He's going to do all these miracles, and he's going to do these amazing things. And now it's, everybody go. We're all going. This caravan, we're getting there. No matter what gets in our way, we're getting to Jerusalem. So he sends this group ahead. And as they move forward, it doesn't end until Palm Sunday, right? When all of a sudden the crowds are there, and if you've ever wondered where does this crowd come from? How did everybody get so worked up? Well, it was because Jesus had sent out all these people ahead. They were going out ahead, and they were announcing, he's coming, the Messiah is coming, Jesus is coming. And so the anticipation would build, and momentum would build until that day that Jesus arrives at the city gates. But this particular group of Samaritans did not want Jesus and his entourage to spend a night in their town. In verse 53, but the people did not receive him because his face was set towards Jerusalem. Isn't that interesting? They didn't receive him because he was determined to go to Jerusalem. Well, what does that have to do with anything? Well, Samaritans, if you know the backstory of the Samaritans, if you go all the way back to Old Testament, whenever Israel was exiled and there was some that went off to captivity and then came back and rebuilt the temple, there was a group that stayed and intermixed with other groups there, and they kind of created this hodgepodge offshoot religion from Judaism. And they no longer viewed Jerusalem as the place that you were supposed to worship God. They felt it was Mount Gerizim, which is outside of Shechem. And so that's what caused a lot of the strife between Jewish people and Samaritan people. Now, when Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, they viewed that as more of an affront to their theology. Jesus, why can't you come to our place of worship? Why can't you come be the Messiah at our temple? So as we look at the way they respond to Jesus, Jesus is giving them an opportunity to follow him, giving them an opportunity to be involved in this momentous occasion of the Messiah marching towards Jerusalem. And instead of being a part of it, they just said, no, if you're not going to be on our agenda the way we want to do it, then don't bother in coming over. So what does that tell me about why or what is keeping them back? And I think entitlement is the best word for it. As I struggled between how do I phrase that? And the reason I thought about that is entitlement's a sneaky thing, you know? We are very quick to identify it in other people. I hear it all the time, well, that group is entitled, or that person's entitled. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone say, I've just been acting very entitled lately. We don't tend to want to identify it in our own life. Instead, they essentially were saying, Jesus, we want you to follow us and the way we want to do it. We would like to set your agenda. Well, how does Jesus react to that, right? That's the second thing we want to look at. How does he react? He doesn't. That's the interesting thing. It's a non-reaction. Why? Because he's on mission to go to Jerusalem. He's going to invite them to be a part of it, but he's not going to stop and have a theological discussion. He does do that a little bit with the Samaritan woman at the well, you see, but even there, he's more interested in her heart. He's more interested in her meeting and having a relationship with God. And so he has invited and called them to follow him, and they have said, no, if we can't define where this whole thing's going to go, we don't want any part of it. Well, that's the very definition of entitlement. I deserve to choose how this thing's going to play out. And I think if we're going to learn something from this little interaction about what it means if maybe entitlement is our pushback, that our heart is saying, God, I want you to follow me, then maybe it's this. God's going to accomplish his work. Jesus continued on. And the next town received the blessing. He's going to continue to do the mission. And he continues to invite us to be a part of it. When we are entitled, when we begin to want to dictate and say, Jesus, follow me, I think we miss out on the presence of God in our life, just like this Samaritan village did. So we also see a contrast, though, the way the disciples reacted. Because Jesus had a non-reaction. He just said, okay, just keep going. A couple of the disciples didn't want to let them off so easy. So we see the next pushback, and it's going to require a little explanation because I decided to call this low grace, low mission. And I'm going to explain this. And I went all over the place trying to figure out what exactly is happening here. But I think this is what's happening, is that the pushback we see in the disciples who have already been following him around, they are actively following Jesus. But in this particular point in time, they do not react well with grace towards the Samaritans. They have a very ungracious reaction. And that has caused them to get their eyes off the mission. The mission is get to Jerusalem. But because they do not respond to the Samaritans with grace, they want to stop and they want to see a little retribution happen. They want a little side trip. Jesus rebukes them about it. And so we have to stop and say, well, if he's gonna call them out on something, then there's something here. So I think we're going to see a connection between living by grace, being gracious towards others, and being mission-minded. So let's look at these next few verses. So they didn't receive him. Verse 54, and when his disciples James and John saw it, they said, Lord, do you want us to tell fire to come down from heaven and consume them? But he turned and rebuked them, and they went on to another village. Jesus said, no, non-action is the action we are taking. Let's keep going. Now, to James and John's credit, previously, he sent the apostles out to do miraculous thing, and he gave the instructions that if there was a town that didn't receive you, what are they to do? Shake the dirt off their feet and keep going. Now, the instructions were not call down fire from heaven and burn them up. There's, in my mind, a huge difference between those two reactions. Well, where's this shake the dust off? Well, that was actually a Jewish custom that when they would go off traveling for business and they were somewhere, a pagan city, they would shake the dust off, symbolically saying, none of this paganness is going to follow me back to Jerusalem, which, you know, wasn't the same thing that Jesus was talking about. Jesus was just saying, your job is to go out and preach. If someone doesn't want to hear, move on. Release them to me. Because he says that I will be the one that judges. You are the one to go preach. You're the one to spread grace. Shake your dust off and to let them know that the kingdom of God has come near. You chose to reject it. That will have consequences, but we're moving on to the next thing because here's the mission. Go out and spread the gospel. So these disciples were very low grace in reacting to the Samaritans. And I think this is why Jesus rebuked him, is not only was that not a very gracious thing to do, because, you know, do they deserve to burn in this moment because they wouldn't house him? But it also showed that they were not very sensitive to how critical this mission was. Because if they were willing to stop and take up a crusade every time someone rejected or every time they had a disagreement with someone theologically, Jesus would have been 43 when he died on the cross. And I think that we, in the same way, some of the pushbacks, when Jesus calls me to follow, he knows full well that he's calling us to follow into rejection, into conflict, both with other believers and both from those outside of the church. He calls us to missions of grace, though, right? Think about the mission statements that we read about in the New Testament. Love one another. That's a within the body. That's a grace-led mission. Make disciples. Pray for one another. Love others, love God. These are all things that are very much soaked in grace, have to lead out in grace, and also taking into account that some people are not going to accept it. Some people are going to reject it. Some people are going to disagree with it. Or just plain old grassroots conflict. I don't like you. You don't like me. We look different. We act different. We respond different. We parent our kids different. We let our kids do this. You don't. Whatever it is, we as we follow Jesus along, we need to have that grace in order to stay mission-minded. How am I to love you, as Jesus says, I should love you if I am not soaked in grace? And then whenever something does happen that should maybe make me offended, does it just run off me like water off a duck's back, right? I'm going to bring up another duck illustration. And some of you are going, is that all this guy ever talks about? This is really important. Why does water run off a duck's back? You ever wondered that? Well, it's because ducks love rolling around in the mud. They love getting muddy. They love getting wet. And if they didn't have something to protect their feathers, they would be saturated all the time and they would sink. Like if you throw a chicken in water, it's going to float for a second and then get saturated and sink. So when a duck comes out of water, watch it. What it does is it first cleans itself. It rinses all the dirt off. And then it actually has glands on its back that produce oil. And it takes that oil and it rubs it over every inch of itself and makes sure that its feathers are covered in oil. Knowing full well that he is once again going to have contact with water and gross and junk. And that stuff's just going to fall right off. It's the preparation before jumping in the water. And in my mind, as I consider how God created that creature, knowing full well that this is a creature that loves rooting around in the mud, that it's going to need some sort of mechanism to keep it from getting saturated and sinking into that mud, is the same mechanism that he gives us, the church, knowing full well that he has called us into muck and mire and interacting with people and the messy business of life, knowing that we are going to be quick to get offended and want to launch crusades. And he's saying, no, let my grace just saturate you. Every time you come out of that muck, you need to revisit my grace. Let the grace allow the dirt of this world to just go right off your back. See, it isn't just that a duck just naturally does that, that it just happens. No, there's preparation ahead of time. And as we spend time following Jesus, he penetrates our heart, and the longer that we comprehend his grace and sit and allow and soak in his grace, the more that I can follow him into high, tense, stressful, conflict-ridden situations. And I can walk out of that and say, okay, I'm going to go to the next person. I'm going to talk to the next person. I'm going to continue to love you even if you behave and push back in this way. But low grace meant that they were low mission. That was a pushback that Jesus rebukes them for. So we had those two. We had the Samaritan village and the disciples. And now we're going to, in verse 57, see three different people. And it's kind of a shift because he's going to start moving. And he's going to use these interactions with these three different people that are going to show us our last three pushbacks. As they were going along the road, someone said to him, "I will follow you wherever you go." Now, I don't know about you, but I have this picture in my head every time I read this passage of the part in Forrest Gump when he's running. And he's run all the way from one end of the country, and he runs all the way back to the other end of the country, and pretty soon he's got this group of people just following him, and all the reporters running up and going, "Why are you running? What?" Because we just assume there's got to be a reason, right? We have that group that came up earlier. They're running for a reason. People aren't going to run alongside James and go, "Why are you running? What are you doing?" Because they're going to understand, okay, this is a race. Now, if he kept running and just kept running, people are going to start to say, "What are you doing?" And so I get this, I have that same image, these three people that Jesus interacts with along the way, of just groups coming along and saying, "Hey, I see this. I want to be a part of this. I want to follow you." And so this man comes up, and in Matthew it says he's a scribe. So this is someone that is kind of in the profession of discipleship. And he has decided, "Jesus is my rabbi. I will follow you wherever you go." But Jesus has an odd reply. "Foxes have holes, and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of the Man has nowhere to lay his head." Why does Jesus react this way? Well, the first thing we're going to see is our next pushback that this guy is letting us understand, and it's a big one in many of our lives. It's uncomfortable positions. It's going to understand that Jesus is going to lead me to uncomfortable positions, and I'm not sure I'm ready for that. See, back then, if you were in the business of finding a rabbi that you would follow, and if the rabbi decided to make you a disciple, that rabbi now made sure that you were fed and housed, and they would come and stay in the guest room, or it's a very intimate relationship. And so this guy is essentially saying, "Hey, I'll follow you. Where are we going? Where are we going to set up shop? Are you going to start a seminary? Am I going to have a dorm room? You know, what's going to happen?" So Jesus understands his point, and he understands what he's trying to say, but his reaction is one that helps us see that Jesus really lays out the expectation and cost of following him up front. You can't read through the Gospels and then walk away and go, "I want to follow Jesus because it looks like it's going to be this really exciting, comfortable thing." Instead, he says, creatures have a place to live, even birds. But if you follow me, here's two things I can promise you. One, you're going to be uncomfortable. And two, you're going to have no idea where you're going to go next. I will lead you into uncomfortable places, and you need to be okay with that. And as I consider Jesus' response, I have to stop and think about where he has led me, where he's led you. Think about it. Has he ever led you in an uncomfortable conversation? Has he ever led you into a position of trust that is uncomfortable for you? Where is this money going to come from? How am I going to answer my child's question? What does it look like now that this person has passed away? These are uncomfortable things that God has led you into. Jesus does not promise comfort and clarity and control. He promises a little chaos. Right? He has not promised to lead us into the shallow kiddie pool. He's promised to take us out into the deeper water, because that is where our true discipleship can take place, in the sense that now I have to let go and see God begin to shape me. But he says he's going to be there with us. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. He'll lead us into these uncomfortable places, but he will be there right along with us. So he puts it right out there for this guy. Listen, you have the wrong rabbi if you just want to take up a residence. Because where you go, it's not going to look like that. And we look at all the disciples and where they eventually went and the martyrdom they experienced. But at the same time, the excitement of seeing people come to Christ, of a church being planted, of miraculous things. They could have never predicted as they were putting nets together to go fishing day in and day out before they met Jesus that the day they decided to follow Jesus would lead to those kinds of things. And I could say I've been in some crazy situations in ministry since I've decided to that this is what I'm going to do. And I know many of you have as well, that you've followed Jesus into some crazy mission trips. You're in a hut in the middle of Africa or something, or just helping a neighbor or getting involved in a situation you never thought you would be involved with. And you look on the other side of it and go, you know, I'm glad I didn't have control of that, or I would have never ended up there. And I got to see God do an amazing thing. That's following Jesus. The next thing we see has to do with our other priorities in life. It's the next pushback. Other priorities, right? Other life priorities. We have a lot going on in life. And you can maybe call this busyness, because I really think when we say I'm so busy, what it is I have a lot of other important things that pile up on top of each other. If you were all in junior high, I would stand up and say, stop playing video games, and you'll have plenty of time to do everything you need to do. But I know you have jobs, you have family, you have things that are important things. Jesus calls us to follow him through those things and not allow those things to bury us so that we don't make him the first priority. And we see this in this even odder exchange. So in verse 59, we see that he actually goes up to someone. Jesus goes up and says, follow me. But the man responds and says, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. And here's a phrase that's going to happen twice. Yes, but first. You ever said that before? When God calls you something, yes, but first, let me do this. Let me do this. Let me do this. Now, we're going to dive deeper and expand this idea of busyness and priorities next week, so I don't want to spend a whole lot of time here, but I think at a surface level, we can at least try to figure out why Jesus seems so insensitive. Because his response is, and Jesus said to him, leave the dead to bury their own dead, but as for you, go and proclaim the kingdom of God. Now, you maybe have heard this before of trying to kind of remove the sting of Jesus' words by saying, well, what this man was really saying is my dad's getting old and he may die and I'm going to need a little time. And that's fine if you want to go that direction, but there's really nothing in the actual text to say that that's what's happening here. I think it's fairly clear. He needs to go bury his dad. And we think, well, sure. If there's ever a reason to not follow Jesus to Jerusalem, it's a parent that just passed away. Jesus is not being insensitive to that reality. I think he's actually pointing out the fact that, yes, these things will happen. These things will happen. But sometimes opportunities come along that you have to decide, you know, is this a higher priority in this moment? Because as soon as he says, thanks, but no thanks, he doesn't get another opportunity to physically follow Jesus around. That's an opportunity that has come and gone. And we can look at that and go, yeah, but, and all I can say is Jesus' reaction is fairly straightforward. There will always be other life priorities. But what's the pattern in your life? What's the pattern? Do those other life priorities always get in the way of the opportunities God sets before you? Is it a pattern? Is it consistently happening that I just can't seem to ever follow up with this person that God has called me to minister to because I have all these other things going on? And it's something we all experience. For years of working with students in particular, it was always highlighted when we were at Baylor with Campus Crusade, and we'd have our weekly meeting or Bible studies with these group of guys or the whole group, and then I'd see them on campus, someone on campus that hasn't been there a while. And I would go to them and say, hey, where you been? We miss seeing you. Oh, I just had so much homework. And at first I would be, again, gracious. Oh yeah, I understand. After a while I want to go, everybody has homework. You're at a university. That's what you do. Everybody that's at the Bible study had homework. Everybody that's at the weekly meeting had homework. Everybody that's at church had homework. Everybody that decides to get up and read the Bible has homework. How are we going to follow Jesus with all this homework? That's the question we got to figure out. Because there's always going to be homework. And it doesn't stop when you graduate, right? Adults, we still have homework. My homework's just dishes. I have homework every night. Does the pattern of my life of following Jesus reflect the fact that I have decided to put him underneath all the other important things? They're all important, yes. But what is the most important in that moment? There are times when we have these things and we got to deal with it. But is that a permanent state? Next thing, we'll dig into that a little bit more, or next week. Then our final pushback for this morning, though, in verse 61, we get indecision. Indecision, that's a big one. Jesus says, follow me, and you just, I don't know. Yet another said, I will follow you. And here's that phrase again, but first. Lord, but let me first say farewell to those at my home. Again, seems like a legitimate thing. Here's Jesus' response. No one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. Again, Jesus, you're being very insensitive. This is his family we're talking about. He doesn't know if he'll ever come back. You know, back then it was very dangerous to travel, and you only lived to, what, 35? I mean, you might have a, you know, hit your foot on a nail and die in a week. This is insensitive. Let him say goodbye. Well, this is what Jesus is referring to. He's actually referring to the call of Elisha. And if you want to turn with me, I'm going to have it on the screen, but in 1 Kings 19, we're going to see an eerily similar interaction between Elijah and Elisha. And right before this, Elijah was having a crisis of faith, and he said, I'm the only one out here that's going to ever follow God. And God says, no, I got a lot of people. In fact, stop whining. Go to Elisha. He's going to be the person that will succeed you. And so we see that call of Elisha in verse 19. So Elijah departed from there and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him, which I think is very impressive that he's got all 12 lined up. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him, and that was a symbolic way of saying, you are now the prophet of God. You will lead Israel. But this is Elijah doing it on a sprint. Run by, cloak, keep going. This reminds me of Tilly up at Mission Arlington. Doesn't have time for any of this nonsense. I got something else I need to do. And he left the oxen when it dawned on him, what did Elijah just do? He's called me to follow him, follow God into this calling. And he ran after Elijah and he grabs him and he says, wait, but first, let me kiss my father and my mother and then I will follow you. And here's a weird statement. Elijah says to him, go back again, for what have I done to you? What's his point? Elijah is being very clear again. I'm not the one calling you. God's the one calling you. Why are you telling me? You need to decide what you're going to do. This is your decision to make. Are you going to follow Jesus in this matter, or are you not? Well, what does he do? He gets the message. He returned from following him, took the yoke, which are again made of these long wooden beams, sacrificed the oxen, had a big barbecue, fed the town, said goodbye, went off and followed Elijah. What I think this leaves us with as we conclude this time is this: the determination is a decision. And I've listed these five general areas of pushback, and over the next 7 weeks we're going to revisit some of them, maybe add a few. And my prayer for you is to just evaluate. Just sit and think about these five. Which of these are the things that just seem to pull me back from following Jesus? And then make a decision. Am I going to start following Jesus in this area? You know, Ash Wednesday was this last week, and so begins the Lent season, and usually people give up something for Lent. And that's not what this is. I'm not saying you need to tell Easter, give up being ungracious. Give up, you know, having your priorities kind of out of order. No, this is instead a Lenten season of self-evaluation and looking to see how determined am I to follow Jesus and making that decision. We're going to sing, I have decided, right? I've decided to follow Jesus. Where's Jesus leading you? What's holding you back? Let's let the Holy Spirit work on that this week.